Hey everybody, welcome back to Two Pixels Off. This is Mike Janda coming at you live with my homeboy, Brad Hussey.
Brad Hussey's here, coming at you from Canada.
What did they call you in the locker room, man? What did they call you?
Huss Dog.
The Huss Dog. They call me Janda
the
Man.
The Huss Dog.
Janda Man.
Janda Man.
It's Janda Man and Huss Dog coming at you live from Two Pixels Off Studios in Canada and the United States.
Welcome to Two Pixels Off, a podcast for creative entrepreneurs.
That sounds epic. It sounds epic.
It does.
What sport did you play? Like chess? Were you on the chess team or something?
Where do you get? Oh man, I was a wrestler.
You were.
I was a wrestler.
I could see. Do you got cauliflower ear? You got headphones on right now, but
you know, I don't. I made sure not to get it. I'd wear the ear protection because I was my wrestling coach had it, and I was like, I don't want to look like that.
Yeah.
And so I wore the ear protection.
I saw a TikTok the other day. I get fed some MMA stuff because I'll watch people get knocked out on social media.
Same, actually.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, let me see. They're like, check out the greatest knockout of all time. And this guy didn't even know it was coming. That's a hook for me, man. I'll be like, okay, you won 35 seconds of my time. Anyway, so I get fed that stuff. And one of these TikToks was like, how to create cauliflower ear. And they like had a piece of mat and they were like slamming it on his ear and stuff. Like he was trying to make cauliflower ear. I don't know if it's like a badge of honor or something, but I don't know. I hung out with a bunch of wrestlers in my high school years and several of them had cauliflower ear in a bad, bad way. And
anyway. It's not a good look. I mean, unless that's what you're going for.
Man, it's a good look. If you want to freaking be MMA world champion, then UFC, that's a good look because that guy's
a badge of honor
scary, man. Yeah, you can punch him in the side of the head as hard as you want, and you're just hitting bone. Yeah, it's pretty good. Anyway.
How are we going to tie that one in today's episode?
I don't know. Huh? We're on a massive tangent. Sorry, everybody, for not going right into value today, but Brad and I like to chat as well. And hopefully some of you get some value out of that, maybe a little entertainment or whatnot. All right, today we are going to be talking about buyer decision-making and how you can win more projects by understanding the mindset that your client uses when they go to make a purchase decision. That's what we're going to be digging into. Why do people buy anything? Why do they buy anything? Now, I have a little pyramid of, let me count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6 different reasons that people use to make a purchase decision. 6 different variables that they weigh in a purchase decision. And on the bottom of this pyramid is variable number 1, and it is price. Some people are out there looking for the cheapest price no matter what, and they're not going to buy it if it's not the cheapest. These are the people who shop on the clearance rack inside the clearance store. Like they walk into the dollar store and the very first place they go is to the clearance bin of the dollar store where they can get something from 7 years ago for a dime. This is that kind of mindset. And there are clients out there that are like that. I don't recommend using price as the variable that differentiates you from your competitors. I don't want that to be the reason that they choose to buy from you. I want you to give your client better reasons to choose to spend more on you than choose the cheaper price. Now, some of those better reasons, Brad, you have some of this chart up. What is the next one up? Do you have that up on your screen?
I do.
Yeah, what's the reason somebody would choose to buy from someone?
The next level, they're looking to pay for convenience. So like they want a faster turnaround, or maybe they are in a similar geographic location and they want more access to, say, decision makers with less gatekeeping. So they want that convenience.
Convenience. I think it's a big deal. If you are targeting clients in your local area and you're local, you can be the convenient choice for a lot of clients. Now, in a worldwide global economy, this is challenging for some people that are targeting, and I know I coach people and know a lot of people in India and Africa and stuff that are great designers, but they're at a disadvantage in the convenience play when they're trying to target US-based businesses because they're in the opposite 12-hour time zone of awake hours in the day.
Yeah.
They're on the flip. They're on the exact opposite of the side of the world. So that's not a variable that they can compete on and win in many circumstances. Now, you could be said, well, when you're sleeping, I'm working. And when you wake up, all the stuff sitting there in your inbox, there's a way to flip that and play. Mm-hmm. But it is about convenience being that next variable up. This is why Amazon, man, I've paid for Amazon Prime 2-day shipping since the very day it was available and charged, and I've never looked back, and I've never considered ever not paying my whatever hundred something a year for Amazon 2-day shipping, Amazon Prime. Do you pay for it, Brad?
Yep, I do. Yeah, we have that here in Canada too. But although we don't have the same day thing where it comes the same day. We don't have enough distribution centers around.
The same day is freaking epic. You know,
that's killer,
it's
right?
So
but we
killer.
Do get we can order something and get it the next day.
Yeah. So the same day thing, I will pay more. This goes to the variable on why we make a purchase decision. I will pay more for a more convenient delivery time. If I go in the morning and say, okay, my protein shake mixture is running out, I know I don't have any left for tomorrow, I can pay $52 and have it delivered tomorrow, or I can pay $54 and have it delivered this afternoon. I guarantee I'm having it delivered this afternoon for $2 more. I will pay more money for the convenience of getting it when I need it. So this is that convenience thing, and people will pay more for convenience. People will pay more. This is the next variable up, variable three. People will pay more for a better customer experience. They like you. The project is smoother. You have better systems. You're more organized. You're no drama. You're not going to stress them out. They will pay more for that customer experience than the cheap one who's going to be miserable to work with. What thoughts do you have on that variable of?
And that's a valuable one. And a great one to be able to compete on. It's, for example, let's use Amazon for a second. You know, Amazon and online shopping is super convenient, but it lacks in something. And then a lot of things, really, but depending on what you're getting, customer experience. So, I mean, if I'm buying, let's say use like, we have a hot tub, so we need to buy the chemicals to make sure it's the water's clean and whatnot. For me, I go, ooh, my pH plus is getting a little low. I'm going to need more for the next time I do this. So Amazon, boom, I don't care about the customer experience on a $12.29 order. Now, my wife just got some winter boots. Now, you can buy winter boots through Amazon or through a big box store. And it's convenient. It's easy. But, and maybe this might be a dovetailing into then that's the next one up, which I won't tease or hint yet.
Okay.
But the customer experience of there's a more local Canadian shop that's here. Now it's still online you're shopping, but you can talk to real people. The customer experience of ordering it to knowing it's all handmade in Canada. It's going to take some time to get your boots because they have to make your boots. Mm-hmm. Like all of that, actually, that's valuable. That feels nice. And you don't get that from like a quick fix Amazon order. You know, it's not convenient to order, but I'm not shopping for convenience. Why would I buy in that scenario? It's because I'm shopping for customer experience.
Yeah. So I just went to Las Vegas for a weekend away maybe a month ago or so. And Las Vegas, you walk around these casino hotels and it is like, here's the Prada store and the down the list of fancy stores, you know, and why would anybody purchase inside the store for more money versus ordering it online for 10% less, when they're shopping for Prada. What is the customer experience when they walk into a super high level store, the Rolex store? What is the customer experience in there compared to just ordering it online? It's so dramatic. They you will pay more inside the store, but you want to go in and you want them to show it to you and talk about it and tell you the features and put it on your wrist. And they tell you, here's a mirror and here's how good it looks and all the things that make that experience exciting and engaging for you. You'll pay more for that for some things. And I believe that creative services is one of those things. People would rather pay more for a good experience working with you than cheap working with someone who is miserable to work with and does not hit their deadlines and does not communicate effectively and does not understand the scope. That's the customer experience, and they're difficult to work with. I'd rather pay more and work with somebody better.
Yep. And if that's what you're valuing, and sometimes what you're offering, it doesn't call for a good customer experience because it's not necessary. So our customer experience selling this little widget or this little tool, you're like, I don't care. It's not worth a lot and it only solves a small problem for me. It's nice, but I can get it anywhere. Mm-hmm. You're like, the customer experience doesn't necessarily matter there. Yeah. But let's say your competitors, you find out through talking to your customers that it's so deeply frustrating to engage in that business, engage in that industry. The service providers are all aloof. It's hard to get a hold of them. They're all, you know, cocky and have a bad attitude, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I can never get my problem resolved, blah, 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 blah. You go, this is a bad customer experience industry. If I can, you know, and they say, if you're zigging, then you zag. What do you do to outclass your competitors? If they're lacking and dropping the ball in customer experience, that's your opportunity to pick up the slack and be easy to outshine your competitors.
I see this in the construction industry. I've hired a lot of contractors and things over the years, remodels and basement finishing and things for properties I've owned, build outs of commercial spaces and things that I've done in the past. And there is such a dramatic difference between the low end contractor customer experience and the high end contractor customer experience. It's so dramatic. It's not even funny. The high-end experience where you know the timelines and milestones and you have a project plan and you see some blueprints and things, that's so much better of a customer experience compared to, I hired a really, really cheap company, a couple dudes, I think they probably had just gotten out of jail or something. I mean, no offense to the people who have been in jail. We've all been arrested at some point in our lives. Those are other stories for future date. But we hired these guys to do our basement and they had no plan, man. They showed up with wood stud, 2x6s or 8s or 2, whatever they were going to stud it up with, and just started nailing, man. It was like no plan. You didn't know when they were going to show up. You didn't know when things were going to be done. You had to call them and say, hey, when are you coming back to our job? That kind of experience. I hated it. But it was cheaper. It was cheaper mm-hmm. than the better customer experience. And I think that's what we're leading to here is that customer experience, people will pay more for a good customer experience. Okay, so we have these three variables so far. Price is on the bottom. People will pay more for convenience, level 2. People will pay more for customer experience, level 3. The next level up is what, Brad?
Quality, better results.
Better results. And how do you define results in creative industry? What are some of the results? Is it always numeric? Like, oh, I got money. I spent this and I got this back. What are some of the results that clients expect? Why would they pay more for better quality?
Yeah. Well, for one, like a higher quality end product that may or may not give them any return on their investment, you know, just a higher quality piece, you know, that in and of itself, being in possession of something, a tangible, let's say a website, a brand identity, you know, whatever it is, when you see that there's craftsmanship, there's quality, it's almost palpable and tangible how beautiful it is. Maybe it is. Maybe you've developed, like, you know, there's this notebook, you know, this is Wix Studio sent me this notebook and it's beautifully branded. It's got nice pages. Like, it's not cheaply mass produced. Like, it's actually really nice stickers and whatnot. So the product, you're like, ooh, I like this. I like holding this and experiencing this. You know, maybe it's intangible or tangible. So there's that, but there's also, an actual return on investment, which is another one, an obvious one, the ROI. So if they paid you $15,000 for XYZ or XYZ, then they know that they're not only going to get that $15,000 back, but that $15,000 has unlocked and enabled them to be able to now make $30,000, $35,000, whatever that tangible return is. Yeah. Also, there is the quality of the, like, the brand image. Let's say you're building out this website, this brand package, all of it, the whole kit and caboodle, and they paid a lot of money for it. They know that it's going to make them look good. Mm. There's their perceived brand image. There's the trust. There's the reputation. If you're a high-end luxury brand or you want to be perceived in such a way and your logo was on first pass generated by AI and your copy is off, your site is a mess, half of the pages are broken, you know, but hey, you got it for cheap and it was pretty quick, you know, like, and you're trying to be perceived as like the quality luxury brand, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So you're paying for quality. I don't care how long it takes, or I don't care, you know, you're going to give me quality. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say one more thing here with the shoes that I mentioned, these boots that my wife got. She bought a pair of boots years and years and years ago. And they were in Banff. We were in Banff. So we just recently went there for our Easter break. And she went to the store and they were these beautiful winter boots and they were nicely made and they were leather and there was like patterns and stuff. And it was really nice. They looked good. But they were leather and they were also made in Canada, which is very, very rare these days to get an actual locally made, locally sourced and crafted product. They're expensive, but also they lasted years. I'd like to say they were probably lasted like 5-6 years maybe, and they still exist. In fact, they kind of got damaged. We had them repaired by a person who repairs leather boots. And they're still in good condition. So they'll probably last 10, 12, 13 years and then be just like this heirloom piece almost. They were a lot of money. Now, I bought a pair of crappy whatever boots.
Moon boots.
From like the
moon
boot store.
I envision you a moon boots. You remember moon boots?
They're basically moon boots. Yeah. These big, ugly winter boots that they're not good. They're not quality.
Yeah.
And they're already falling apart. And I think I bought them a year or two ago and they cost me maybe $110.
Yeah.
But if I'm replacing those $110 boots every year versus buying maybe a $400 pair of boots and they last you 10 years, it's just a different.
Yeah.
So the quality, we could have got cheap boots with, you know, convenient and didn't have to wait and order it from Montreal.
Yeah.
It's like, no, but they are quality. They're handcrafted. They're beautiful. She gets compliments on them and go like, where did you get these boots? You know? So that's quality.
Yeah.
People will pay more for that.
Yeah, people will pay more for quality. I think that this is a play for a lot of creative service providers. You do better work than the next person on the list. I think that it is where you start unlocking the higher budgets. In fact, I know that that's where you start unlocking the higher budgets. You start, because it's easier to have a good customer experience, create that systems and processes and be organized. It's easy to be convenient where you're like, I'm going to hit your deadlines. We're going to make this work. I'll do calls during your business hours, no matter where I am in the world. If I'm in India, I'll get up at, you know, 2 a.m. and do my client calls because it's convenient for you. You can get over some of those things and it's easy to charge cheap prices. I think that where you start unlocking the higher budgets is in this quality play. And you mentioned a couple of different ways. I'll summarize it in saying that there's really two things. You can look at the quality as improved quality is going to generate more return on investment, financial return on investment. That's number one. Or it's going to generate for you pride of ownership. You talked about both of these things, pride of ownership. I can tell right now how proud you are of your wife's boots and where they were sourced and where they were bought and how great they look and all of the stuff. I can tell. And they're not even your boots, man. They're your wife's boots. So there's pride of ownership. I've had that with things that I'm like, I really love that. I love that. Guitar pedals, man. I pay more. I don't get the cheap pedals. All my pedals are freaking Strymon pedals, man. I have like every Strymon pedal there was, and Strymon pedals are some of the most expensive of the guitar pedal world, and they sound better, and they're made out of freaking colored aluminum, and they look so sick, and they fit all together. It's so sick. I freaking love it. I love it. And I pay more because it is better quality.
Yep.
Okay. So now we have price, convenience, customer experience, quality. The next one up is relationship. People will pay more to work with you because they know you and they trust you. Brad, what's the longest run that you worked with a client? Like you had a client and they were your client consistently for X number of how much time?
That would be, because I've had a few of them actually that have spanned a long time. I'd say in the peak of my freelancing, I had an agency who basically worked with me for, I would say, a good 5-year run where I would just get, I wouldn't even have to, they would just send me it and they say like, whatever it is, like there'd be an automatic approval of my price. It didn't matter. Cause they were like, you're the guy. Like, and in fact, that agency evolved where the account managers I worked with, when they left that agency and they went to a new agency, I automatically was trusted by that new agency because that account manager was like, I work with Brad. That's it.
Yep.
And then it was just like, so that was like a gravy train that kept going.
For so five, 6 years on that one?
5-6 years.
Yep. Okay. So if during that 5 or 6 year run, let's say year three, I would have cold called that agency and said, hey, I heard you're working with Brad. Now I can do the same quality as Brad. I'm in your same time zone. I can charge the same as Brad. Use me instead. What is the chance that that agency would have parted ways with you and started working with me?
Be very, very low.
Very low.
Very low.
Like it was the same, man. And this is the relationship thing. And you mentioned something too. They didn't even care what the price was. They told you, just do it and just charge us what it's going to be. I had my clients, man. I had a few clients that would tell me, they'd tell me the budget in the early days. I love this. I mentioned one in our last episode, but it was this website for Sony. And my person, I had the relationship there and she said, how about 20 grand? And I was like, okay, that sounds good. I wouldn't have charged 20. But that's what it was and should have been. But I wasn't ready emotionally to do that. But I did because she told me the budget. I had another person, ABC Family, was a client for, they were like bankrolling my business for the first 5 years or so. Biggest client by far. And they would tell me the budget almost every time. Mike, we got 12 grand for this. Mike, we got 7 grand for this. We got 18. This is a bigger budget one. We got 18 grand for this. And I would just bid it back at the budget that they told me because my relationship was so good with the client that they trusted me implicitly and they wanted it to be a win-win situation. And Brad, if you would have called either of those clients in those days, there's zero chance you would have been able to beat me in relationship. Yeah. I think relationship is so highly esteemed in why people make purchase decisions for creative services that it's almost unbeatable. If you have the best relationship with the client, you're going to win in most cases. I believe it. I built my whole business on that. My whole agency was built on getting a client, building a rock solid relationship with them, getting them to trust me implicitly by running a good business and not freaking gouging them everywhere I could. And having them come back for more and more and more. I built my whole business on that model right there, relationship.
Yep. 100%. And people will, because of that brand loyalty, it can also even lead them to making bad buying decisions by sticking with a company or a brand, even though it's no longer worth it for them. So that's how tied people will be to that relationship, even if it's like a bad one.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So price, convenience, customer experience, quality, relationship. On the top of this pyramid, there is a variable that is so valuable that will unlock the biggest budgets of all the budgets. If you can establish this, you can make millions and millions of dollars as a creative services provider. This is the most valuable one of all, and it's so hard to attain. Brad, what is that variable?
I'm excited you let me do the
I was building it up honors. So that I could like have you unveil it. What is the most valuable of all the variables in why people make a purchase decision?
People will pay the most because of your reputation.
Oof. Reputation. Okay. If the client believes that you are the best in the entire world, the best choice for this engagement, they will choose you and pay whatever it takes to get you to do it, assuming they're a client that has budget sufficient to do that. Brad, do you know the most expensive rebrand of all time? Do you know what it was?
I don't actually. I'd like to say, nah, okay, I'm just going to throw one out there.
Throw it out.
But, and you could tell me because you know the answer.
I do.
I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to say when they changed the Pepsi logo.
No. No, okay. But I think that was $1 million engagement.
Okay.
Okay.
I'd like to know.
British Petroleum rebrand in, I want to say it was 2009, but I don't remember exactly. You can look it up and just look up most expensive logo of all time. You're going to find it. Don't look it up, Brad. You can't look it up.
Okay. I won't look it up. You just tell me.
I'm going to ask you the next question.
Oh, okay. Okay.
How much was it for the rebrand of British Petroleum, the global oil and gas company? What did they spend?
Okay. I'm going to say it was $5 million.
$5 million. You're such a wuss.
Sounds like a lot. Well, the Pepsi one was $1 million.
So when it comes to pricing, come on, man.
But I didn't want to go so
high. Give me a big number. Give me a big number.
You know, it's always sad when someone's like, give me a big number. And then you do a number that's way bigger. And you're like,
this is what I'm doing to you. It's like, I'm like knocking your self-esteem right now on the show live to the audience.
Okay.
Give me another number. Make it a little bigger. Most expensive rebrand of all time. British Petroleum. Brad says 5 million. 5 million sucks, man. 5 million sucks. Give me a real number. Give me a real number.
You don't blame me if I blow this one out of the water.
We'll see what happens.
I'm going to say it was 100.
100 million. Are you kidding?
Yeah. No.
You think that they said somebody could charge $100 million for a rebrand?
I don't know who could do that, but I mean, you told me to go high, so okay. I went really high.
Okay. That's not high enough.
What?
Give me one more number. This is your last chance. And if you do not get this even close, you're off the show. We're going to find a new pixel.
Okay.
The pressure is on.
This pixel's got some pressure.
This pixel is pressure.
Okay.
Don't look it up. I see you looking at your computer screen.
I'll put my hands here.
Okay.
My hands are up. No, okay. I'm not typing. I'm using AI and eye tracking to Google form. I'm just joking.
You got AI goggles.
Okay. I'm going to say this was... what did I say? The last one was 100 million?
100 million. And that was Wuss City.
That was Wuss. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say this was 750 million. $750 million.
Okay. Now you're getting ridiculous.
Okay.
It wasn't $1 billion. No. $210 million for the rebrand of British Petroleum logo. Landor Associates, $210 million. Let me take that, Brad. I came to you and said, Brad, I'm British Petroleum. And I'm like, Brad, Landor Associates is freaking out of their mind. They're trying to charge us $210 million. I like you, Brad. We have a good relationship. We have good customer. You have good customer service. You're convenient. You're right down the street from me. I'm not going to spend $210 million on Landor Associates. Would you hire a bunch of employees, do a rebrand for me, spend the next year on it? I can only afford to pay you $190 million. You interested?
I can tell you right now, I'd find a way pretty damn quick to make that happen, to assemble the right. I now have the resources to say, give me the best designers. Let's assemble the best team and let's make that happen.
Yeah. So do you think that happened? Do you think that there was a bidding war and somebody pitched British Petroleum logo or identity for $300 million and they chose the low bid, $210 million from Landor Associates? Do you think, what do you think the experience was, the shopping experience? Why did Landor land that for $210 million? How in the world could they have done it?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and just say that they weren't interested in price shopping. They weren't even in the market for that. They just simply said, these are the people we work with. And these are the people we work with. And I don't care.
Yeah.
And then because of that reputation and that deep connection, they'd pay whatever it took.
Yeah. How many designers in the world do you think could have done a comparable job to the redesign of that identity? How many other agencies do you think there are that could have possibly at all even come close to the level of quality of the British Petroleum identity design?
Now, the level of quality and deliverables or just like what the logo looked like?
All of it. Like the whole deliverable, like the package, the brand package at the end, how many people could have done it? Like if quality was the decider, how many, do you think that there was anybody else in the world as capable of designing it as Landor Associates?
You know, I think it's like, we're not talking about like some of those Olympic athletes where you're like, these people are like freaks of nature. Like there's no way that most people can get even close to that. I think in this case, yes, their quality was probably top tier, world class. I would not doubt that. They probably crossed every T, dotted every I, and everything had an explanation and a reason and an essence behind it. I'm certain of that. But as far as what the actual quality of the deliverables and the actual outcome, and then at the end of the day, the logo and the letterhead looked like, I'd say that there's a good number of decent agencies and freelancers worth their salt who could have reproduced something close to it, if not the same thing, which tells me that, you know, like they're not just buying the quality here. That's a given. They're not going to pay $210 million for crap. They're getting the best. But a lot of people can kind of reproduce what looks like the best.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what they were buying. Am I getting this?
Yeah, it's smack on. It is the point I'm trying to make is that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of creative people out there in the world that can do the quality, that could have hit the timeline, that could have given a good customer experience, that maybe even had a relationship with someone on the inside of British Petroleum and could have done it way cheaper, but they were not chosen. The reason they were not chosen is that somewhere, someone inside of the decision-making of British Petroleum wanted Landor Associates to be the agency that had the stamp on that logo.
Yeah.
That's what I believe. And I don't know that firsthand or anything. I'm just making some assumptions there. But if we look at this hierarchy of why people buy, you cannot unlock the $100-$200 million identity design world without having reputation. It is the sweet spot. By the way, I was pulling up some things while you were talking, and the Pepsi logo was $1 million, by the way, the Pepsi rebrand. I think you said that.
There it is.
So you're back on the show. Congratulations.
Yeah.
your pixel
I'm
is
back on the show.
Your pixel is reinstated.
My pixel has been placed back on the screen.
Good. It's not off anymore. Okay.
Love it.
So the point that I'm making here is that we need to understand the variables that are at play when someone is making a decision about buying from us. We have to understand these variables. Now, if we go into a competitive bidding situation where, and we understand these variables, and let's just take Brad versus Mike. Let's just do this as an example, Brad. Okay. I have these up on my screen right now, the five variables that we have: price, convenience, customer experience, quality, relationship, reputation. Brad, I know that you have you're going to do great quality, and I'm going to do great quality. I know you're a great designer. I know that I can design good enough to satisfy the needs of the client. I know that our quality, let's say, is the same. Okay. And I am cheaper than you. You can't touch my cheap price. I'm going to be cheaper than you. Neither of us have a relationship. Neither of us have a reputation that's going to command the client to choose us. How are you going to win? I'm cheaper with the same quality. How can you win that project?
Mm. Okay. So looking at this chart, I've got levers to pull. I don't got reputation. You don't got it. You know, we're not competing on relationship. We don't got that. Quality is the same. Your price is cheaper. So I'm losing out in terms of that. So what I've got left is the customer experience and the convenience. So this is basically, what would they say? Like no man's land. This is up for grabs. This is hasn't been determined who's winning yet. So if I can ensure that my customer experience and convenience is unparalleled, I can stack the odds in my favor of winning.
Okay. So you have to play up the variables that you can do better than me and play down the variables that I have better than you. Right now, we're the same on quality. I'm winning on price. You have to sell your client on the fact that nobody is going to have a better customer experience than you. You can say things like, yeah, you can go with Mike. Mike's cheaper. I know Mike's cheaper.
Yeah.
But why would you ever choose Mike when I've never missed a deadline in my whole life? My clients love working with me. Check out this testimonial. Oh, yep. Brad is the greatest person I ever lived. I love working with Brad. This is one of Brad's clients from Hillbilly Town and in Canada somewhere. I love working with Brad. He's so great. And then Brad is saying, I've never missed a deadline ever. And then Brad's other hillbilly client, I love working with Brad. He's never missed a deadline. And Brad's showing these testimonials. This is how Brad incorporates into his sales pitch the fact that he's going to win in those things. And you, in your sales pitch, have to say, why would you ever go with the cheaper option? You're just going to have a miserable experience and I can provide you a good one. You're just going to have somebody missing deadlines and they're going to want calls not during your business hours and blah, blah, blah. Why would you ever want that when I can give you the same quality and give you a much better experience? Yeah. This is the mindset that we have to bring in. Now, you don't know who you're bidding against. You don't know. In some cases you do. I knew sometimes who my competing agencies were when we were pitching work. You don't always know. You have to make some assumptions. You have to make some assumptions when you go into a sales pitch and you can say, all right, I know I'm not the cheapest. I know somebody's going to come in cheaper than me. I'm not going to be the cheapest because of what we talked about in our last podcast, supply and demand. I know I have a lot of demand. I'm going to charge them a premium price to work with me. But so I know I'm not going to be the cheapest. So I'm going to go into this pitch helping them see where I'm better because price is not the variable that I'm going to play on.
Absolutely.
Did I sound like some of your clients? I feel like I did. Like, was that accurate?
Well, you know what's funny is that, like, you kind of went, like, because you're in the States.
I know.
So if you're thinking of, like, the South and the States.
I know.
You're going to have a very different type of, as, you know, one might call hillbilly or, you know, mountain man.
I know.
We've got our own. We've got our own. But the Canadian, you know, folk who habitate those sorts of areas, like, they obviously sound a bit different.
Yeah,
but
I do know.
Maybe.
Can you do an impression? You were a musical theater dude. You were like drama guy. Give me an impression of a client. Come on. Make it good, Brad. The listeners want this. The listeners want this.
We've got a lot of ranchers around here, but okay. I've never had a rancher client. But if I did.
Yeah. What would they sound like?
He would be like, let me see. Hey, Brad, you know, like, I don't want to beat around the bush here. But let me tell you, like, I'm a straight shooting guy. And you're not going to pull the wool over my eyes. I worked with a few of you creatives, and I don't know if I trust you. But you know what? You seem like a good guy. You seem like you got your head on straight. So why don't you just give it to me straight and tell me what it is that the price is. And we can go from there, and I'll tell you what it is I'll go with. How's that sound? Sounds good? We'll do a handshake on it.
That's pretty good.
That'll
sounds
be like
a little Strange Brew. Like Strange Brew. You ever see Strange Brew? The show?
Are we talking like the movie. Like hey, hoser?
Yeah. Hey there. Yeah. Hey, Hoser.
That's like 100% like a caricature version of a certain Canadians for sure. But yeah, if you get enough beer or you just kind of get the right folks together, you're like, oh man, that's totally. I was just out and about, and it was just you'd get that for sure.
It is good. We have some people in the United States that talk like that because they're on the border of Canada. They're up in the upper Minnesota areas.
Minnesota. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch Fargo, the movie Fargo or the show Fargo. You got some of that that going. Okay, all right. Yep. So let's wheel this back into. I got us on a tangent there doing my impressions. Okay, let's do another scenario, Brad. Using these six variables, let's say that you know that this is a new client. You've never worked with them, and you assume that they've been working with somebody in the past. So somebody has a relationship. Somebody has a relationship in there. And you know from looking at their brand and their website and stuff that whoever has that relationship does quality work. So somebody has a relationship and somebody is doing quality work. They beat you on both of those variables. How in the world are you going to win that opportunity?
So they're beating me on
relationship and quality. You can't design as good as that person.
Okay.
And they've been working with them for 2 years. What chance do you have? And there is a chance. It's remote. Those are two really powerful variables. Quality and relationship are two of the most powerful variables in this buyer decision-making process. But there's still a way that you can win. How do you win?
I try to pull the levers of superior, exceptional customer experience or how convenient it is. I really ham this one up. That's a lever that I pull hard. And I can even tell you a little bit about that. Or price, but I tend to like to avoid the price thing. I don't like charging less. I like charging more.
Yeah.
And so I don't like try to fight on price or compete on price. I don't even play that. But what I do is the convenience. And even the customer experience, I like to pride myself on like making sure that customer experience is there or the reputation, you know, you build that over time, you know, with each project, but convenience, I'd go hard in for sure.
Let me tell you something about price in this situation. Cause I competed on price a ton at my agency and over the 15 years of agency run did $30 million in revenue.
Okay. Yep.
But I competed on price because I was in a second tier market and not a first tier market. I wasn't in LA. My clients were in LA. I wasn't in San Francisco. My clients were in San Francisco, New York, DC. This is where the majority of our revenue came from. I competed on price, but it was still a lot of money. It was when the mega agency in New York would have been $1 million for the website that we did for Kraft Foods. We were 500 grand. So competing on price doesn't mean that you're cheap. Right. It just means that you're less than the competing agency or competing creative for that thing. It doesn't mean that you're cheap. So I don't think we should just scratch off price and say that it's not a variable that we want to play. I think that price is a variable that you can play depending on where you are in the market in general. And if you're competing with people that are in more expensive places and more expensive agencies, it is a lever you can pull and still bill a lot of money.
And
there's an interesting thing in this too, when you look at cost structure, because my cost to do business being based in Salt Lake City was much less than the competing agencies in Brooklyn. Much less. Mm-hmm. And so on a $500,000 project, I might have the same net profit that the agency from a major market had to, that they got doing $1 million for that same exact work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. You just might not need to charge a lot. You know, if you're getting a project that's $100,000 is your competitors, and you can do it for $60,000, but it's simply because your offices cost a fraction of, say, downtown Brooklyn or Manhattan or something. Mm-hmm. You're like, I don't need to pay. My staff are cheaper. My taxes are cheaper. My cost of living is cheaper. Like, everything's cheaper, but I'm giving you the exact same, if not better quality. And also it's more convenient, but the price is way cheaper. You're saving 40 grand here, whatever it is, just because it's geographic location.
Yeah. So I think it plays. It's part of the variables that we need to understand when we're pitching. All right, let's do one last one. Let me pick an admired agent. I always loved RGA. I love the agency RGA. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's just so good. I love their story too. If you don't know the agency RGA, and shout out to anybody from RGA listening to this, I love your freaking agency and I love the history of your agency. It was started doing freaking movie titles and stuff, like the Superman 1 movie titles where they swoop in and all that stuff back in like the 70s. So sick. So sick, but they pivoted and they also did like the Nike Run little pod that goes in your shoe to track your steps and your run and all that stuff. They did those kinds of digital media projects and stuff too. So they pivoted over time a few different times. And I love to see an agency with longevity that pivoted multiple times. Okay, so let's just say RGA has this great reputation. They got a great reputation. And Brad, you know, it's hard to beat reputation. We should have used Landor Associates for this example because they have the most expensive logo ever. But let's just say that it is RGA, great reputation. You're bidding against them. How in the world can you possibly win this project?
It's like the value of reputation is so high, you have no choice. But you can't come in and say, well, our quality is the best, even if it is the best.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not enough to tip the scales. Mm-hmm. And looking at it, it's necessarily at the top of that food chain, the top of that pyramid. And in order for you to knock that off or to stack the odds in your favor, you have to necessarily beat them in price, the convenience, the customer experience, the quality, and the relationship. You need to stack all of those so that you can tip that reputation scale, because reputation's at the top. Mm-hmm. They'll pay the most and they don't even really care if your quality is better or your convenience is better or your price is better.
Yeah.
But if you could stack them all, you might make them go, whoa, 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 wait, and have a decision maker go, maybe we should consider thinking a little bit different here, and maybe we're not seeing something right, and we're just kind of getting a little bit stuck in our ways because of our brand loyalty and reputation of this other agency. What if this other shop can do all of this better?
Yeah.
And then that's a risk worth considering.
Okay, so let's take this into a sales statements that you could say in a pitch when you're pitching, you know, you don't have the reputation and you're trying to win in every other variable. You can say things in your presentation like, and this is for the relationship variable. Hey, I know I've never met you before, but I want to work hand in hand with you. We're going to fly out once a week and do our presentations in person for you. We'll be here pitching, showing you the design work in your conference room. And that's the kind of relationship that we want to build with you as our partner client. Okay, that's relationship statement. You can say, look, I know that there are a lot of people that do great quality work out there. The last project we did, we actually won a Webby for it. Here's what that is. Here's the quality that we did. It got recognized. And look at what this creative director, one of the judges at the Webbies, said about that project. Here's a statement. So now we're trying to play up the quality thing. Even though it's probably comparable, we're trying to show that we can compete in that variable. Customer experience, you could say something like, you're going to have a dedicated team to this project, not just a dedicated account manager like you're going to get at some of the bigger agencies. We're going to dedicate an account manager, an art director, and two production designers to work on this project, and they will be yours until this project is done. We want this to be so seamless for you. Sally, our account manager, is going to check in with you, send you updates every afternoon, let you know the status. You're always going to know what's happening with this project. Okay, that's your customer experience statement. Convenience. Look, we've never missed a deadline. And in fact, when we take on a project, we turn down everybody else until the project is done. So we're not going to have anything competing. You will be our priority number one. We will hit every deadline because your business is our business for the engagement here. And on top of all that, this is the price variable. On top of all that, you know what? We can be 20% cheaper than the mega agencies that are in Manhattan, and you're in Manhattan, and we're in Salt Lake City or Atlanta. Well, Atlanta is a pretty big major hub, or we're in Dallas, or one of these tier two, almost tier one, but tier two cities. We can be 20% cheaper than the competitors on top of beating on making great relationship, quality customer experience, on highlighting all of those things. That's the only play you have when it is, you're competing at reputation. You have to highlight how you can be the winner in all of these other variables.
Yep. That's your format. That's your structure. That's how you, if you know where your competition has got you cornered, then you can go, well, they can't have everything in the bag. Mm-hmm. So where can I win? What's my unfair advantage? What are their weak spots? And that's what you have to look for. And you could look at it as, where are their weak spots? If you want to see it that way, sure. But you can also look at it as like, where's my unfair advantage over them? Mm-hmm. And my unfair advantage is not in reputation. It's in these other places that if I stack that, I can start to tip the scales and win this bid.
Okay, so now flip this exact one that we just did. You're pitching the value of all those things. What does RGA say to the client? They say something like, why would you ever use freaking Huss Dog from Canada? Why would you ever use Huss Dog? Yeah, they're going to fly out and do all that stuff, but they do not have the brand reputation that we do. When we do work for our clients, it means something. We get written up in Ad Age magazine or Ad Age. There'll be an article online. We're going to win awards because whenever we submit for an award, people take notice because we are RGA. This is the kind of positioning that they play to try and trounce you winning on all the other variables. And this is the competitive thing. This is all you have. You have to understand the variables and then try to win in the categories you can win in and try to downsell on the value of the other categories where you can. That's how it works. And I think what I wanted to get out of this episode was helping people understand that you can go into any of these pitches. And if you understand these six variables, there is a card for you to play in this game. You just got to understand your position in the market and in the pitch and who they might be pitching against you, who it might be. You make some assumptions. There's no question, make some assumptions, but yeah. I think that there's a way to win, and you have to understand these variables to make that happen.
They're not invincible. Like your competition who's competing for the same thing. And let's be honest, you're not going to be competing with someone completely out of your league. Like that's not what we're talking about. There's leagues here. You know, there's weight classes, let's call them. To do the MMA, sort of like tie the MMA in here. It's like you have weight classes for a reason so that you can actually see a reasonably fair fight and watch like real competition. And so if you're competing with someone who's got the reputation in the bag and they've got that, and you know that if they get you in a corner with reputation, you're not going to win that match. Mm-hmm. But they got weak points. And if you know you've got some unfair advantages that you can, some cards to pull, some techniques and strategies that you can kind of throw in there, you can start to level that playing field, maybe even tip the scales. And that's where if you have those, if you can almost memorize those levers and also their priority, where price is at the bottom and reputation is at the top. And if you can almost understand them and memorize them, you can almost just be going into any of those, let's call them matches, mm-hmm. where you're trying to win a deal. Mm-hmm. And even your client, potential client, gets on the phone with you and they go, see, like, we got another person here who's like, they are top dogs. They are the top dogs. You know, oh, I understand that you got someone on the hook there and their reputation is, I can't win on that. I get it. I totally appreciate that. And we're working on that. But let me tell you something. Boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. And then you can tip those scales.
I love it. Okay. Good. This was super fun. All right. I'm going to just as the kind of the recap here, these are the six variables that you have to understand. It is price. It is convenience. It is customer experience. It's quality. It's relationship and reputation. That's the order from bottom to top on where the value is and the variables that your clients are considering when they're choosing someone to do creative services work for them. We neglected, Brad, to mention our sponsor at the start of this episode, Wix Studio, who makes 2 Pixels Off possible. And interestingly, Wix Studio has all kinds of tools built into it to help you manage your clients and create a good customer experience and deliver work to the client and have great features and deliver quality work in a short amount of time. There's so many ways that Wix Studio can help you excel in a variety of these different variables. It is worth you checking out if you're doing web design and development. It is a no-code website builder. Super powerful.
Exactly. And not just the builder. It's the business tools to back it up. Because there's lots of builders out there. Yeah. Lots of great builders out there. But it's on top of a great product. It's those business tools that you can actually build your agency on top of, and you can rely on those tools as well. So that's convenience right there.
Yes. Good. All right, Brad, thank you. This was super fun. I think that this one, man, I'm passionate about all this stuff, but I'm passionate about this topic because I didn't understand it. I didn't even understand this. I understood it in my core, but I didn't understand it in documentation until I started teaching this to other people. I made an Instagram post on this, like in year one that I started sharing on Instagram, 2019, I think, was when I made a post about this. And that was the first time I think that I ever really documented this concept, but it's so powerful. I wish I would have understood it long before I did.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Got any closing remarks as we say goodbye to the pixelators? What I don't know what you call these people. What do we call the people who listen to this? Is episode 4? Is anybody still listening out there? If you're still listening, write a comment.
Give us
a review and tell
us. Leave
us
a review.
I'm
Who's
still
your favorite
listening.
Pixel?
I'm still listening. Mike, Brad, you're still there. Thank you. We appreciate those of you that have stuck around.
Yeah, really appreciate it. I'm going to say that. Right now is the time that my kids come home from school.
Oh, no.
And it happens. Like, my son is already on the drum kit, and he's testing me right now. He's, like, hitting the snare. Mm. And he's like, Oh, nothing yet?
How about
a couple hats in there?
Huh? I don't hear it.
Oh, it'll happen quickly.
Good.
And it'll happen. And the toddler will descend upon the studio and it'll happen. So this Pixel should sign off.
Good.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, we are signing off, and it is getting to the end of the business day, too. Brad, always super fun to podcast with you. Thank you for the conversation. I learn stuff from you every time that we jump on here, so I hope our listeners are, too. We will see all of you next time on Two Pixels Off.
This Pixel Off.
This Pixel Off.
Nailed it.